The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MoGPOD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. My name is Jim Race. I'm here with Jules Cisek, and this is episode 190. Today is August 14th. Howdy, Jules.
Hey, how's it going, Jim?
Good. Doing things a little backwards today, aren't we?
Yeah, figured we might as well do things a little bit dazed and confused. That's going to be the episode name, Dazed and Confused, because we're going to talk about Casey Stoner a lot.
Excellent. And perhaps a not more dazed and confused person there is on the planet right now, except maybe Supo.
Oh, my God. That's right. And, of course, we'll do a preview of Brno because racing has been away for too long. So it's time to go racing.
Absolutely.
Okay, but main topic, Casey Stoner. It started this week, earlier this week, Casey Stoner and Ducati made a press release that Casey will be missing the next three rounds of MotoGP. That's Brno, Indianapolis, and Misano, citing health issues. Obviously, this health issue that he's been dealing with for since Catalunya has not gotten better. He has been tested in the U.S. here before and after Laguna. Now he's got to go to Australia. And they're going to continue trying to figure out what the hell's wrong with him.
I just a few minutes ago watched an interview from today, Thursday, with Supo. Apparently when he had gone down to Australia, and he's already down there, and he's been there for, I guess, a short period of time, doing regular activities and whatnot, not even racing or training. Riding horse was one example that he was getting similar symptoms, and that was ultimately why the decision was made by, I guess, the Italian doctors to sit him out for three races.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's totally new news. And I also saw on some forums, some sites are reporting, well, it's usually those Italian /crash.net sites.
Yeah.
You know, weekly news of MotoGP that are reporting that, that Ducati might actually just replace Stoner and that's it.
I didn't get that indication from Livio Supo's interview today at all.
I mean, I think they have to be completely insane to even be considering that at this moment. I mean, like they should be concentrating on getting him well and not, you know, and that's it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I that sounds to me more like something that got baked up and is burbling because people are looking for something that's even more of a bombshell than him being out for three races.
Right. Exactly. And that's crazy enough. I mean, he is still a contender for the championship, but of course these three rounds that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, if there was one guy that he was competing against, something might happen to that. But there's, you know, effectively now three people because Danny Pedrosa is full health and he's bound to be riding well for the rest of the season.
Sure. And I think, everybody's kind of looking at Rossi and Lorenzo right now as the two guys. But even though Pedrosa is fairly far out, who knows what could happen between now and the end of the season.
Right. It's unlikely that both Fiat guys will lose out, but you never know.
Yeah. Yeah. As you've mentioned before, you know, he could be in a serious fight for second. But you never know. You never know. I mean, who ever thought, you know, a few races back that we'd have a four-way tie for first, so.
Right. Was it four-way or was it three-way?
I think it was four-way.
No, I think it was three-way with Pedrosa very close. It was like 106, 106, 106, and then like
104 or something like that.
Yeah,
but it's regardless. I mean,
yeah, super close with four guys and the magic ones, the untouchables. They're getting all sorts of nicknames to that group of riders, those four riders that are basically, I think, getting a reputation in the paddock as, you know, definitely not just riding on the best machinery, but being the best riders, most skilled, most likely to take it to the championship.
And now we've got one that's seriously touched and out.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about that. So, you know, for a while I've been talking about Casey Stoner getting that this might be like a psychological stress related issue, and you know, I don't want to like continue down that path too much, but I did want to. I think it's time that we talked about a little bit about Casey Stoner's history. You and I know this little story, heard this story a long time ago, but basically, there was a. I just want to give basically some background to just for people to just understand what Casey Stoner had to go through to become a world champion in 2007. Because I think that you know, ourselves included, I think people have not given him enough credit. And so this started way back when he was being trained, because Casey Stoner and Pedrosa were both being trained by Alberto Puig at one point.
Sorry.
What's that?
Somebody booed in the background. I'm not sure why that happened.
Yeah. And because Puig had to decide on one rider, he basically decided to take one rider and become the manager, and he picked Pedrosa. And the story goes, and this is completely, this complete rumor, hearsay, there's no, you know, shred of evidence of any of this, but it sounds really, really
semi-plausible.
Plausible,
yeah.
You know, that once he did pick Pedrosa, because he knew that Stoner was a very fast rider, you know, and his reasons for picking Pedrosa may have been that they're both Spanish, that he knew that he'd get a sponsorship for Pedrosa even more easily than for Stoner. What are the reasons? He picked Pedrosa, and then, because he is known for kind of like a Machiavellian backroom, whatever, politics, he started putting all sorts of obstacles in the way of Casey Stoner.
Right.
And that included, you know, things like making it difficult for him to get a factory ride, getting on the right teams, all that kind of stuff. Again, like I said, there's no proof of this, but when you think about 2005, when Pedrosa won his championship before coming to MotoGP, Casey Stoner was on a second tier team. Certainly, his bike was not anywhere near Pedrosa's bike's capabilities, and he still pushed Pedrosa pretty much to the end. And it wasn't until like maybe three or four rounds from the end where things fell apart, and it was basically because of his crash. And I believe it was in Phillip Island, out of all places, that he crashed.
Yep.
And then comes 2006 when they both come into MotoGP. And once again, you know, Pedrosa goes to the top team, the HRC Repsol team, and Casey Stoner ends up on an LCR Honda, and Casey Stoner kicks serious ass on that LCR Honda, especially in the very beginning. And you know, we all remember that season as him crashing a lot, and him getting a label of a crasher, but if you kind of like, now that we have hindsight, we can look at what transpired. I mean, he basically was just pushing himself in an unbelievable way, and either the tires or the machine was just not able to withstand what he was doing to it, you know. And so he was falling a lot, and then of course he got picked up by Ducati, a team that I think Alberto Puig has absolutely no tentacles in in there. If you continue with this story, and immediately won the championship.
Well, you know, yeah, and there's whole sea changes though that occurred from obviously 05 to 06. You've got the 990s to the 800s. You've got him going from Michelins to Bridgestones, and of course, leaving the HRC organization, however third tier he might have been with LCR, and going to a very independent Ducati. And yeah, hey.
No, absolutely. I mean, it was the only way I think that he could have freed himself from if you go with the story, this was the only way he could free himself from those obstructions. So, and then of course, Ducati, themselves were trying to shake off the roadblocks that they had, which was, you know, the whole Michelin giving top riders best special rubber. And they made the switch back in 2004 to Bridgestone. And together they came up with a tire bike combination that they were getting the best support from Bridgestone, you know, so it all kind of came together. That perfect storm that Bob Hayes always, you know, talks about, it came together and Casey Stoner was there to take advantage of it. But I think that now that we've seen just the incredible parade of riders trying to tame that Ducati, even during the 2007 season, with Lois Caparossi, who was actually very well versed with the Ducati in the 990 days, you know, we have to give full props and full credit to Casey Stoner. And now that he's gone, or actually now that the season started and the riders continue to have to struggle with this motorcycle, it puts even more pressure on him to perform because he's the only one who can do it. And Ducati's desperate to figure out a way to both have him succeed on the bike and at the same time make the bike more rideable for other riders. I think that the one thing that Casey Stoner might not be good at is actually developing a bike that other people can ride.
That may very well be true. I mean, he's got, to some extent, had to spend... even if you harken back to the way that he was forced to ride the LCR Honda, a lot of that working around what the bike and the tires were doing is stuff that he was able to carry on to Ducati. And while it may have been the best bike, it probably wasn't totally there yet, especially if you look at Caparossi's performance on it the first year.
Right.
And so maybe he's over-adapted and can't figure out how to go back to a relatively normal style. But so, and all that leads into... back into the situation that we're in today, which is Stoner out on the factory. You've got Hayden left, and now we're bringing up Callio from the Pramac team, and as well as bringing in Fabrizio, at least for one race from World Superbike. And now what's Ducati going to do?
Yeah. And so I just wanted to wrap up the Stoner portion of this with, the guy has been under unbelievable pressure that I don't think any rider in MotoGP has been in a very, very long time. You can point to, you know, 2006, Nicky Hayden, in Valencia and, you know, the whole battle with Rossi, the points battle, because they never really truly battled on track. And so there was a lot of pressure there and Nicky breaking down at Estoril after a nasty incident with Pedrosa. There's been a lot of these moments, but I think that Casey Stoner has been under sustained stressful situation, and his body's basically just exhausted. And I would love it if I just want to make sure that, like, cause people have been writing in for a long time, thinking that both Bob and I always talk about Casey Stoner in a sometimes negative way, and. I don't think you ever have, but I just want to make it very clear that I want to see Casey Stoner back, and I think that if this rest is what he needs and he can come back, then it's going to be awesome. So best of luck to him, and I hope he recovers.
I hope that's all it is, and he figures a way around it. That, you know, that would probably, in a strange way, be the best news that we could have. So, let's see how it comes out. And in the meantime, we've got a whole bunch of new factors to deal with, don't we?
So, yeah, exactly. So we got Mika Kallio, who has done pretty well on the Pramac bike. He had a couple of bad rounds. He was heading for a top six finish at Assen when he crashed at the pretty much, you know, three corners from the end in a really fast portion of the track, and he got hurt. But you know, he's back. But he's not just going to be able to get on the Ducati. I'm going to let you say this because you were the one who made all these great points the last time we talked. So
let me see if I can reiterate what I said was he's coming from a bike which basically the adjustments are defined by the factory. Now whether they can and as well probably with somewhat reduced electronics and suspension settings and all that stuff, that if they try and put him onto, you could put him onto the factory bike with those same settings, and the question is, would he go much faster? Would he be able to place better? If they go to adjust the bike beyond the parameters that are available with the Pramac machine, can he adjust to those to go faster? So there's still going to be a learning curve. It's not like he's going to jump on that thing and immediately, I think, take a huge leap. But at the same time, Ducati is going to have to be paying an awful lot of attention right now simply to keep their own, you know, 2010 options alive to make sure that they get some decent results between now and Casey's return.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, Fabrizio is going to come in and, you know, he's never been on an 800cc, or at least as far as I know, GP9. And so what he does will be of interest, but since it is just possibly a one-shot-off deal, I don't think he's really a factor unless he gets all the way up to the front and does something that nobody wants to see.
Yeah, let's have Ben Spies come in as well.
That'd be fun.
I mean, it's kind of funny because he, you know, they just left Bruno.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's one real good reason to bring him back, because he rode really well there.
It's fresh, and it's also fresh in his head right now, so... but it'll be very interesting to see just how well he adjusted the bike. I mean, the technology differences between World Superbikes and MotoGP are ridiculous, you know, in terms of the electronics.
Yeah, there's no doubt. At the very least, you know, he's moving from within a pseudo semi same organization, and you know. There will be direct passing of him. You know, you can probably take his data and look to see what he needs a little bit, and see how you can apply that to the MotoGP bike. But I can bet all the, you know, the data guys on GP side are going to look at Fabrizio's and go, well, he should have kept the throttle open. He should have never braked.
right.
So yeah, I mean, who knows how much of it's going to translate? And frankly, we'll by the time this. By the time this is out tomorrow, we're going to have a real good idea.
Yeah. I'm really interested in seeing, you know, what happens between Kallio and Nicky Hayden. I think that all the teams, everybody in the paddock acknowledges that Nicky Hayden is a very easy person to work with, and I think Kallio seems like a bit of a cold guy. I remember he had last year, he had some. A lot of words with Ayama, for various, you know, incidents here and there. So that'll be interesting dynamic to watch.
He is from a Scandinavian country.
Yeah, exactly. So cold, I think, goes without saying. And you know, he used to ice race. So
exactly. I think if I was Kallio, first thing I would just go in there as my own guy and nose to the grindstone. And let everybody else sort out whatever I need to get from Nicky. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, I think as long as they cooperate in decent ways, and I'm pretty sure they will, I don't see any friction that would come up, you know, unless they bop off each other on track.
That would really suck.
Yeah. I don't know if Nicola has warned him, you know, remember what he did to me at the Sachsenring in practice or in now qualifying. But it'll be an interesting dynamic, I think, all the way across the way.
Because the other dynamic is going to be interesting is Fabrizio and Canepa on the Pramac. I mean, two Italians, you know, hot blooded. And although Canepa seems like an incredibly chill dude.
Well, he's the youngest guy in the paddock.
I know, but the thing is, like, he was at the Day of Stars at Laguna.
Yeah.
I had a quick chat with him, and he's just super chill, you know, whereas Fabrizio is very, very passionate writer, to the point where he's, you know, sometimes a little bit too passionate. So let's talk a little bit about Bruneau. I think...
Should we back up a little bit to some of the other silly season things that have been going on?
Oh, yes, yes. Go ahead. Yep.
So what we've got, right, we've kind of been waiting to hear what's going on with Aspar.
Right.
And... that seems to be bubbling up more and more, especially as the paddock is filling up now. And my understanding, and I haven't heard an absolutely official on this, although I thought it was supposed to be announced today, is that Barbera had signed for Aspar with Bautista going to Suzuki on, in theory, a two-year contract, but that might even be less certain as to the duration. So that's kind of freed up some of the stickiness in where the seats are going to occur that is even still being held up by the decision everybody's waiting for from Jorge Lorenzo.
Right.
So that's right.
Although I think we know what the decision is going to be. It hasn't been made official.
Exactly. And once that's official, then we'll start seeing some movement from, you know, some of the teams like, for example, Tech 3 and maybe more Suzuki action, see if anything happens. But in addition, at, say, HRC or whatever, you know, we've got some idea about what's going on with Grassini, but there's still some thoughts about where people might still be moving to, and this at least gives us an inkling. You know, this is the time of year right now where things really start happening, and you get a lot of announcements. Last year it was after Laguna. This year, with the shifting of the seasons, it's after or at Brno.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, let's chat about Brno.
Well, you mentioned Tech 3, and I have to mention the incredible interviews that David Emmett from MotoGP Matters had with Pancharol, because he had the fourth installment go up yesterday, and it is even better than all the other ones. I mean, it is just incredible, incredible stuff. So we'll have links to all four of those. Bookmark them because it's going to be really fun looking back at them like 2 or 3 years from now. There's a lot of prophecies in there and a lot of interesting statements. And man, he does not pull punches. You know? Did you read the
oh, yeah.
stuff he had to say about Tozan?
Yeah, I did.
That was amazing stuff. I mean, to paraphrase him, basically, you know, JT wanted Bridgestones, he got Bridgestones. JT wanted. Collins chief mechanic, he got Collins chief mechanic. The only thing that's remaining now is for James Tozan to ride well.
And yeah, and it wasn't really what he said about him so much as what he didn't say.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the classic, like, you know, just read between the lines. He actually reminds me a little bit of Liam. Liam loves to say that in his posts. Read between the lines.
Great little riddles for you to dig into it. It really was a great interview, and it was really long, very several thousand words or more.
Yeah.
And big thanks for David bringing that to everybody. Very cool. So. Props to him and Hervé. Yeah, he was being very honest.
I love that.
Cool. There should be some interesting shifting around this weekend, and you know, even after the weekend, there's with the test on Monday.
The biggest thing that's going to change this weekend is that we're going into the 5-engine rule. So basically, for the rest of the season, each rider gets 5 engines. And the way that works is that once an engine is used, it can no longer be taken back to the factory. It is sealed after every practice session, qualifying, race, whatever. And once the engine is taken, basically if the team wants to use another engine, that engine is taken away and from their allotment of 5. Very funny thing that Rossi said about that. He's like, well, you know, it's going to really ruin the celebrations at the end of the race.
Well, maybe not the end of
that's
yeah, or whoever actually does end up with a, well, there's an interesting I read a little bit more on that today that kind of caught my eye out. If you do use an additional engine, there is a 10-point penalty.
Right, right. So you can still do it.
Yeah.
Like somebody like Rossi, who let's say is ahead by a bunch of points, and says, you know what, I'm gonna push this engine to the limit, and if it blows up, I've got that 25-point cushion right now against Lorenzo. But you know, I don't think they're gonna take that kind of chance. I think that maybe with two races left, yes.
Right. Yeah,
you know, when the championship is really truly on the line at that point,
or if you know he has the championship sewn up by 11 points, he might use it for celebration.
Oh my God, that would be hilarious. That'd be totally hilarious. I'm just gonna blow my bike up. I'm gonna sit here and rev it until the freaking thing blows up. Take my 10-point penalty.
You know, once the tire shredded, I'll do sparking burnouts on the.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
I did a bunch of research last night and today, and I still couldn't find an answer for how the engine use is governed for the test. So I don't know that yet, and I think it's about. I will find out before next week we will probably find out because I'm really curious how engine usage is governed during the test, whether that counts towards their allotment, and I just don't have the answer yet.
I am almost positive that it is counted.
Yeah,
I'm almost positive that at the beginning that question came up. I don't think, but the thing is, yeah, I looked it up a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't see it in the official rules. It may be like, you know, a one sentence thing that I missed, because a lot of the rules in the FIM handbook are like that.
Yeah, well, I went through all their new addendums and everything today too, and I found one that addressed the new engines, and I couldn't find the two that addressed the new engines, and I couldn't find anything about testing. So
I think basically that they're considering testing as another session, as an extra session. And therefore, it falls to all the same rules that govern the engine use, the five engine allotment.
Well, we'll find out for sure. Yep. Let everybody know.
Yep, that'd be great.
But
let's see. So Brno itself, you know, great track. I always like the racing at Brno. You know, I think I'm probably getting like a little boring saying this, but it's one of those tracks where if you look at the map of it, it looks lame, and then when you look at it in 3D, you go, oh my God, this is such a cool track.
It's got some interesting elevation changes. I mean, it's like 75 meters from top to bottom.
Right.
And so, and some of the grades are, you know, there's like, I think an uphill grade of like 7%, which is not huge, but it's not insignificant. And it's a nice wide track with some pretty interesting off camber corners that seem to catch people out just about every year. And while last year's results were totally odd because we had the final Michelin Bridgestone debacle, where the order was nearly inverted.
Right.
You know, on the podium it was Rossi, no surprise there, but then Elias and Caparossi. With Nakano in fourth and walking down that way. So certainly not indicative of what we would see in a normal race.
Right. Because it is a wide track, it kind of has a reputation for being a track where you can pass a lot. But the reality is that actually the lines are pretty well defined. And we definitely saw that in the World Superbike race when we were watching how easily, well, not easily, because Ben Spies is a wizard, but how well he was able to block Max Biaggi in that race too, because Max Biaggi definitely, if he had gotten in front of Spies, he would have won that race.
Well, and how hard it was for Biaggi to get around Fabrizio in race.
Yeah. I think he probably lost 10 laps just getting past Fabrizio. So I think that despite the width of the track, it's actually because of the way the off-camber characteristics, the lines are very well defined. But, you know, it should still be a great race, and it's going to be really cool to see, you know, what happens up front with Lorenzo and Rossi, of course.
And whoever's in third.
And whoever's whoever's in third.
I mean, I think that the usual suspects we can count on being up there. A lightning start at Brno is not out of the question, just due to the nature of the front straight. And we all know who gets those. So, we could have a good challenge. I think it'll be really interesting to watch, remotely at least, simply because of the different television angle coverage. Because I remember last year's Brno race there for MotoGP, and it visually looked totally different than the World Superbike race that we saw just a couple of weeks ago.
They have more cameras and stuff?
Yeah, cameras, placement, experience, people, the whole nine yards. It'd be fun to do kind of a little back to, maybe I'll watch that World Superbike race before I watch, or after.
Yeah, well, there were good races, so it's worth watching, you know. One guy that I think is going to be very, very interested to watch is Gabor Talmacci, because he basically considers this his home race. He's going to have all his fan base is going to be there, and he's been creeping up there. He's got his first points, and he's creeping up there on the times. He's getting closer and closer to respectable times, because he's already respectable by being on there and being able to qualify. But
top 10 maybe?
That'd be amazing. That'd be amazing. I don't think top 10 is really doable, but if he does, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah. It will be fun to see how close he can get. It'll probably be a great motivator and actually increase his skills on the bike enough to where he can be even more successful as the season goes on.
He's a very interesting person, because he's a complete package. He's a businessman. I mean, he's not just a skilled rider. He really, like, he has a manager, but he could probably do it by himself. He probably has a manager mainly just so that he can concentrate on the riding, because when you see the interviews with him talking about like all the media rights issues that he went through, the whole reason how he ended up in MotoGP in the first place.
Right.
You know, that was one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. He just understands and can talk about it, all that stuff, really, really well. So, and he's very aware of his position in Hungary and in Eastern Europe in general, that he's, you know, one of the most popular sports figures over there. That's saying a lot, because those guys have huge football, you know, soccer
absolute
players.
Yeah.
That, so for him to be really well known means he's really well known.
I think one of the things that too is that we can't have super high expectations for him, because we have to remember what class he was racing in last year.
Yeah, he was in the 125s. I mean, think about what this guy went through. How many races did he do in 250s? Three or four.
Yeah. And then sat out for two races.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden he's on the MotoGP bike. I mean, it's amazing. What a story. So if he could finish in the top 10 after all that, that'd be so cool.
I think that's so probably cool. His big goal.
I'll be totally rooting for him to get up there.
I can be rooting for everybody this weekend, I think. It'll be very interesting. That's how I usually am anyway.
Definitely, especially if the racing is close. Well, I don't know. Do you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
So we've got the test on Monday.
Yep.
We talked real briefly about the engines, but there are a fair amount of people that are getting new parts. There are a fair amount of people that are going to be testing new engines, Suzuki amongst them. Whether or not, you know, they're kind of in a bit of a desperate need right now to try and elevate their game a little bit. Even if they do actually have Bautista coming over, mm-hmm. they still need to raise their level, because that's a pretty solid name that's coming in, and they don't
want to waste it.
Absolutely, and I'm sure that they paid a few bucks for it. The question is what can Suzuki do right now? Do they have the internal gumption to bring themselves up, because everybody wants to see it?
Yeah, and I think that until Caparossi went to Suzuki, I think that we were all sort of like, you know, maybe they just need the right rider bike combination. But you watch the way Caparossi has been riding that bike. I mean, that man rides with all heart, and he beats the hell out of himself trying to get that thing around. And I mean, at Mugello, it was clear that if it wasn't for the lack of power on the straight, that he would have been on the podium.
Well, and
at least on the podium
at Qatar, until he went out, he was running in third, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's right. He was doing well. It didn't last very long. It was not that long.
It didn't, but it was long enough to make you go, "Whoa!"
Yeah. There's a blue bike there. What's up?
So that's one thing. I heard whispers that Pacini may get a ride on one of the Ducatis on Monday.
Another one. Yeah, well, their husband talked about that in the past.
Yeah.
That he was going to ride a Ducati. I even heard that Ben Spies was approached by Ducati.
On Monday?
Not for the ride on Monday. I mean, just about possibly, you know, talking to Ducati about riding for them. In 2011 or something.
And clearly that's the other thing that needs to happen right now. Monday is going to be a real big deal for Ducati. It's going to be their first opportunity. You know, they need to get Mika and Fabrizio working well right away this weekend to salvage as many points and as good a result as they can get. So it's not going to be until Monday that they can really start tweaking the bike.
Right. I would say that if I were them, I would throw everything at Nicky because he actually has some points.
True.
That you know, he seems to be getting much better. Although, of course, his best result came at Laguna, where he always is going to do well because of the local knowledge.
But this is also a golden opportunity for them to put somebody on the factory bike and prove that, or try to prove that somebody else besides Casey can ride it. So they've got two in the seat, real world track test riders right now, you know, three.
Yeah, you're right.
So, and they got some work to do. So,
yeah, and this is a great opportunity to do the test and see what happens. And then, you know, they're going to have another break after Misano before the, because there's a big hole that was left by the Hungarian round.
Yeah.
And so, that's probably another reason why this is a good time for Stoner to take some time off. And if he does, if for some reason he can't come back, it'll be another period during which, you know, they can be tweaking on the bike, and obviously they can't test it, but they can bring it back to Bologna and do whatever they can to make it more rideable for these guys.
Yeah, I can imagine the Gresh is probably getting quite a workout right now.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But yeah, so we'll see how things work out. I'm looking forward to a good race weekend, and even if it is just the one, it's nice to have a little bit of the break be done. The schedule's so weird this year.
Yeah. This week's GP Week, GPWeek.com.
Sure.
There's a really cool article at the end that Michael Scott wrote. Michael Scott is pretty much the primary guy who writes about MotoGP for them. It's partially his project, I believe,
right,
based on what he told Adam Silver a few weeks ago. The article is called, you know, Win as Slow as You Can. And it talks about, like, all these great old quotes that mostly are attributed to, like, people like Mike Hailwood and, you know, like, what kind of tires do you use? You know, black round ones, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But it talks about how, you know, how Rossi doesn't usually win by large margins, and that it's actually part of his strategy, because over the, you know, these 8 years, or actually longer than that, that he's been so dominant, he's been, you know, such a dominant competitor, he's built up a reputation for, like, you know, sitting behind somebody and then jumping out the last moment. And what Michael Scott's point is in this article, which, you know, once he says it, his comments, it's like a duh, is that Rossi's extremely good at just hiding, holding his hand, you know, his poker hand, well hidden.
Right.
And you just really never know whether he's riding at 100% or whether he's riding at 95%, because he's not Casey Stoner and Pedrosa that are just banging out those laps and just taking off and disappearing in the distance. And that means that every round you arrive and you're like, you know?
Yeah, where is it going to be? Well, I mean, and if you think about it, in a way, it's unless you have the absolute simple capability of running away with a lead, it's not the safest way to win a race. I mean, a win is a win regardless of how far in front of the person that you are. You know, a lot of the times we'd see, and I'm not talking about trying to break somebody in the middle or during a race. I'm talking about just keeping running at the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen that there have been plenty of rounds where Rossi just took off and disappeared. I mean, Le Mans last year, he beat the field by like 10 seconds.
Right. But we've also seen it when people are trying to run away, not necessarily break, that they've run into problems and crashed out.
Right.
Couple examples of that last year. I haven't read it yet, but I'll definitely read that.
It's just it's worth reading mainly because Michael Scott is just a wonderful writer, and it just put a smile on my face reading it. Just all the quotes from all these famous writers, and you know, that have become kind of like parlance in the paddock. You know,
yeah.
I love it. It's a really good article. It's a great place. I highly recommend you know, everybody listening, that you go check it out once a week. There's a new issue out every week. You can sign up for a mailing list, so they email you when there's a new issue out. It's a little bit difficult to read because it's one of those flash readers where you have to click to zoom in, click out, and go to the next page, click to zoom in, and whatever. They have Formula One, WRC, various motorcycle racing series, and but highly recommended. Last thing, a bunch of people have been asking about Indy. Will there be a meet and greet? And there will be. Unfortunately, Jim, you're not going to be able to make it, right?
No, not going to make it this year.
And Bob is definitely not making it. He's got his chief, whatever, petty chief,
careful,
ass kicking.
Yeah.
That they're delivering him daily. I will be there 12:15 on Saturday. So. Quarter afternoon at the pagoda on the brickyard.
The
yard of bricks there at the pagoda, which is near the paddock entrances. So 12:15, which is just before, it's about 45 minutes before the 125 qualifying starts. We'll hang out there for 30 minutes or so, chat, take some pictures, you know, share some war stories, shake some hands. It'll be good. So see you guys out there. All right, Jim, and I'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Again, enjoy your races this weekend, and we'll chat again soon.
You too, buddy.
Bye.
Ciao.